We're doing the Yaakov on Shabbos. We're up to page Mimtes Amad Aleph, the fourth chapter. And we had learned the story of Elisha Bal Knafayim, Elisha, master of wings. He went out into the marketplace when the Romans said whoever would wear tefillin phylacteries would have their skull pierced corresponding to the location of the phylacteries. And then a Roman officer started chasing him. He took off the phylacteries, wrapped them in his hand. The Roman officer came up to him and asked him, "What do you have in your hand?" He said, "Dove's wings." He opened his hands. He said, "Show me." And what they saw were silver dove wings. So the Talmud says, why? So the Talmud says that a dove is unique in that it protects itself with its wings. So to Israel, protects itself with mitzvot. The mitzvot are what protect us. So Rashi interprets this to mean that other birds fight with their beaks. They have a tough beak and they'll try to fight with their beak. We once had a neighbor that was bringing up geese in the front yard, and these geese had a lot of chutzpah. They'd attack the kids, they'd attack me, and we couldn't get them to stop. So at one point, I kicked the goose away, and the goose continued trying to peck at me. Now, when I'd kick and it would run away, so it would flap its wings. And if you ask me, the flapping of the wings was scarier than the beak. You know, what can the beak do? But it would keep trying to peck at me or the kids. That's its attack method. That's its defense method. The dove is different. It's unique in that the dove would protect itself with its wings. That's what Rashi says. Others, Nachmanides and his disciples, they explain that the dove has a great memory, that the dove's great protection is that the dove knows how to find its way back home. And just like you have homing pigeons, so the dove in general is very unique in its capacity to find its way back home. And that is the way of the Jewish people, that as far as a Jew goes, he's like the dove. Somewhere inside, there's an internal compass. He knows how to find his way back home. And that's the mitzvos that protect us, that somewhere deep down inside, there's still that connecting point. There used to be a politician who was very cynical of Torah and mitzvot. He was known for his cynicism. His name was Yossi Sarid. What people didn't know is that he had a Sefer Torah that he donated, and there was a shul where he gave his donations. At the same time that he was cynically making fun of Torah and observance, deep down inside, he was still connected. The Jew is different. We have this internal compass, and that's another interpretation over here. So the tefillin turned into dove's wings, and we discussed last week whether one is allowed to give up one's life for mitzvot, that this is one of the sources for those opinions that say that you're allowed to give up your life for any mitzvah. We ordinarily say you're only allowed to give up your life for three mitzvot. What are the three mitzvot? Kilui arayot, shfichut damim, and avodah zarah. Ordinarily we say three. Avodah zarah, kilui arayot, shfichut damim. Right? We're not, even if at the cost of our lives, we should not do any paganism, murder, or illicit relationships. But we said the exception would be when there's a shmad. When the non-Jews are trying to ensure that we transgress the mitzvot, that we leave our faith, so then we hold firm to any mitzvah. So here they were trying to get us to leave the mitzvot. That's why they made this decree, no wearing phylacteries. So that's one interpretation why Elisha was ready to give up his life for it. Others say no. He could have put on his phylacteries in private. He did it in public because you're allowed to risk your life for other mitzvot. So that's a discussion, what we learn from this Gemara. Someone had a question? Okay, onward. Yativ Rav Yonatan ben Achinai. The rabbis were sitting together, v'kami ba'ilehu, and they asked the following. Hadit na navot mechot abim chaserachat keneged mi. We say that there are 39 tasks that are prohibited on Shabbos. Now that's very interesting because technically there are many more. It's not 39. How do you get to 39? We have three different descriptions of how you sift. So they broke it down to three in order to get to that number 39, right? You have sifting, you can winnow, you can thresh, not threshing, you can winnow, you can sift, you can do borer. They all accomplish the same thing. You're separating the unwanted from the wanted, right? Why do we count them as three? So this number 39, what does it correspond to? Amar Rabbi Chanina bar Chama keneged avodat haMishkan. Rabbi Chanina bar Chama said they correspond to the tasks that were tasks of importance in the setting up of the Mishkan. Amar Rabbi Yonatan bar Rabbi Eliezer. Kach Amar Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi Yossi lakunaya keneged melacha melachto umlechet. He said, if you look closely, the word, the root, melacha, with regards to the Mishkan, if you go throughout the Torah, you'll see the word melacha and melechet, that root, you'll see 49 times. Shebatra b'im chaser achat. Now in the Jerusalem Talmud, not over here, in the 7th chapter, the Jerusalem Talmud says an interesting thing. There were rabbis who sat down and learned tractate Shabbos, and they worked out 39 toladot, 39 offshoots to each of the avot melacha. So there the Jerusalem Talmud doesn't tell us all 39, but it tells us many of each toladah.
39 for each 39.
Correct. By Rav Yosef. So now Rav Yosef asked, what do we know about Rav Yosef? Excellent. Rav Yosef's name was Yosef. Very good. What else do we know about him?
He was a rabbi.
Yeah. What else do we know about Rav Yosef? Rav Yosef was the Rebbe of Abaye, right? Rav Yosef was blind. So Rav Yosef had a phenomenal memory. And at the end of his life, there was a question, who would be chief rabbi, him or Rabba, who was Abaye's uncle. And Rav Yosef had a phenomenal memory. He knew everything by heart. And they sent word to Israel and they asked, who comes first, Sinai or Oker Harim? One who has a great tradition, like Rav Yosef, who knows by heart so many Tanakh sources, or one who is so sharp that he can figure things out because he's so sharp, and that's Rabba. So what do you think they ruled in Israel? Sinai, they said that Rav Yosef, the one who's the master of tradition, he should come first. So who became the Rosh Yeshiva? Rabba. Because Rav Yosef wouldn't do it. Rav Yosef didn't want to do it. He had a dream in which they interpreted it to him that 2 years after he'd become Rosh Yeshiva, he'd pass away. So he said, no thanks, I'll hold off. And that's in fact what happened. Rabba had a period where he was Rosh Yeshiva, and then when Rabba passed away, Rav Yosef became Rosh Yeshiva, and just like his dream, he passed away. Rav Yosef, even though they ruled he should be Rosh Yeshiva, he was not. Now, Rav Yosef had a phenomenal memory. He couldn't see the text inside, so he knew things by heart. By Rav Yosef. So now Rav Yosef asks, you want to tell me that throughout the Torah, we have the root melacha 39 times. Well, what about this one? It says, "Vayavo habayta la'asot melachto." Yosef came home to do his task. And then Potiphar's wife started the whole story there, right? Miminyana hu'ulo, is that part of the count of 39, or isn't it? Amale Abaye, what's Abaye's relationship to Rav Yosef? So he is his disciple. He was Rabba's foster child. His uncle Rabba adopted him, but he learned by Rav Yosef. Now, remember, Abaye lost his father when? In utero, right after his mother conceived. He lost his mother when? At birth, right. There are times in Talmud, there's a place in Talmud, in Tractate Ksubos, where Abaye discusses how at a wedding of a virgin, they had a custom that they'd put oil in the kid's hair. That was the custom that when the Kala was a virgin, so all the guys got that their mothers would put oil in their hair. So Rav Papa asks him about the custom. So Abaye says to him, you an orphan, buddy? You never had a mother do that to you? Now, that's a joke, because Abaye himself was an orphan. He didn't have a mother. In later on in Tractate Shabbos, so there's a discussion of what's the best way to bandage post-circumcision. So Abaye says, as he does often in Shas, he says, Amirali em, my mom taught me. Who was his mom? His mother was dead. He never saw his mother. It means his adoptive mother. And yet he called her my mother throughout the Shas. Amirali em, throughout the Shas. Abaye says, my mom taught me. So he asks his Rebbe, why don't we just bring a Sefer Torah and count? Now his Rebbe can't see. What does that mean? Don't we have a quote that Rav Yochanan says that they actually counted? They took Sefer Torah and counted? So Rav Yosef tells him, he says, there's one place where it says that they had so much jewelry, gold and silver and materials that were brought for the erection of the Mishkan, that they didn't need anymore. They had leftovers. So over there, it describes the materials that were brought as hamilacha. So does that count? That word milacha over there does not mean task. It means materials. So that he says, I wasn't sure if that one counts. If that one counts, then I know this one doesn't count. The one that describes Yosef coming home to do his task. If this one counts, then that one doesn't. He says, I know the count. I know there are 40 in Torah. What I'm not sure about is which one I should bump out. Do I say that milacha of the Mishkan counts? And then when it describes Yosef coming home, la'asot milachto, it doesn't mean he was coming home to do work. It means he was coming home to sin with Potiphar's wife. We have two opinions as to what Yosef was thinking when he walked back into that house. It says he went home to do the work. Which work was he going to do? So in Tanakh, we use euphemisms. The Talmud in Tractate Psachim describes nighttime as Orlar Ba'asar. The light of the 14th, we check, we do B'dikas Chametz. Guys, you're leaving. Some of you are going to be away for Pesach. You have to check your rooms. You have to check your cubbies. You have to check your locker. You have to check your place in the Beis Medrash. You have to check any place where you might have Chametz. So when do you check? Ordinarily, you check the night before Pesach. Instead of calling it the night of the 14th, the Mishnah calls it Orlar Ba'asar, the light of the 14th. So the Talmud says, yeah, the Mishnah wanted to teach you to use euphemisms. Throughout Tanakh, Yaakov's seeds, Yaakov's offsprings, what does it say? It says, Yotze'e Yerech Yaakov, those that were emitted from his thigh. The Torah never speaks directly about the male organ. When we speak about intimacy, we call it tashmish amita, use of the bed. What are you doing on the bed? Ah, we don't tell. We say it nicer. King Saul has to go into the cave, and he has to take care of his needs. What does it say? Lehasech et raglav, to pour out his feet. His feet? No, he's pouring something else out, right? No, but we don't say. That's the euphemisms. In Tanakh, we speak nicely. So it says when Samson was taken into captivity, so Samson was given the job to be tochein. What does it mean to be tochein? So when you grind something in ancient times, you took a pistol and a mortar and you beat down on it. Well, that action of up and down and up and down is similar to the action that happens when a couple is intimate. So that's, again, a euphemism. Samson, in prison, they brought him every woman they could so that he would impregnate her. They had the hope that they'd have big warriors. Again, the Tanakh uses a euphemism. It says he was grinding. He was grinding? He was being intimate with a million women over there. No, the Tanakh uses a clean language. The Tanakh uses a euphemism. So here, where the Tanakh describes Yosef came home to do work. What work was he coming home to do? One opinion says he was coming home with the clear intent. Everyone's gone. She's been begging me for years now. It's been years. That every day Potiphar's wife would come at him. Here he is, a young man in the home. Every day, three times a day, she would change her outfit. She would do whatever she could to try and seduce him. And finally, on that day, he says, I'm going to do it. She'd tell him, look at me, and he'd look down. She had his master put a knife under his chin so that he couldn't look down, so he couldn't move his head down. So every day she's trying. Finally, on this day, he succumbed. So that's one opinion. So if that's the case, then the word milacha is not talking about real work. So then when we say there are 39 times in the Torah that the word milacha appears, and that's why our sages set it up that there would be 39 prohibited tasks, so then that word milacha of Yosef, that doesn't fit here. So then we have to take the milacha that he quoted, the milacha that represents the raw materials of building the Mishkan. Oh, Dilma.
He said he didn't do anything.
Practically, he didn't. He looked in the window, And he thought he saw a vision of his father, so he stopped. Oh, Dilma, perhaps. We go with the understanding that Yosef came home to do work. He finally had some peace and quiet at home. Everyone was gone. He came home to do accounting. He was good at math. That's the work he was coming to do. And then Miminyanu. So then you count it as one of the times that the Torah uses the word Melacha. And then the Hai Vamlacha Itadayam Hachikama Desham Leavita. So then when the Torah says they had enough raw materials, it means they were able to finish to get the job done, but it doesn't mean the task. And then the word milacha doesn't go into the count. And then either way, you end up with 39. That's what Rav Yosef was doubting. The Gemara says teku. What does teku mean? Teku means tekum. It will remain. It will remain as a question. We don't have an answer. So just as a side note, we were learning about the period of Esther, right? Towards Purim, we're learning about the men of the Great Assembly. We're in the middle of the Book of Daniel. So the leader of the men of the Great Assembly, what was his name? Ezra HaSofer. Ezra, what does Sofer mean?
Scribe.
Correct. Ezra the counter. Ezra HaSofer. So the word sofer comes from the word mispar, number. Why is it that Ezra is called Ezra the counter? So the Talmud in Tractate Kiddushin tells us that in the time of Ezra, the rabbis took the Torah and arranged it in numbers. You have many Mishnayos that have numbers. Tell me some. Guys, you know some Mishnayos that have numbers. Tell me. Think of which Mishnayos you know. You'll see there are many Mishnayot with numbers. What? A woman can be acquired in three ways. You can acquire the honor of marrying her. Three. Why does it give us a number three? That's Ezra and the rabbis. The rabbis in that juncture of Jewish history arranged the oral tradition into numbers. So that's why they were called, the Talmud says, that period, the rabbis of that period were called Soferim. So we ordinarily think sofer means scribe. The Talmud says because they gave misparim, they gave numbers. 39 prohibited tasks on Shabbos. Arba avot nezikim. 4 generalization rules of prohibited damages. But there are many more, right? But we're going to try to limit it to 4 and everything else will be extrapolated from there. Yetziot shtayim shen arba. If you think closely, Megillah nikret, okay, maybe yes, maybe no. According to Rashi, that would probably go under the number. If you think about it, throughout the Shas, you keep having numbers. B'shiva drachim bodekin et azav. You have throughout the Shas, that's the Sofrim. So this is an example of that. You see that the Talmud didn't feel that the 39 has to be 39, and I gave an example of that, that really some of the tasks seem to be repetitive. We don't necessarily learn something new from this name or that name. But they had a point in getting it to 39. Tov. Should we? We got 2 more minutes. You want to do Chafetz Chaim or a few more lines? A few more lines. Okay. Amemar u'marzuta v'ravashi avayat v'besudata. Amemar, marzutra, and ravashi were sitting at a meal. Sitting at a meal indicates that they were focused. There was a get-together. It wasn't just they happened to snack together. Aitu lekamayu barda. They brought before them this thing called barda. Now, what is barda? Barda is a mixture. It has a third of it is a certain grass. A third is hadassim, myrtle branches. And a third of it is a thing called sigli, which is another type of branch. So they brought this before them. And they used this mixture, it was like a powdered mixture, which they used to cleanse their faces with. So they brought them barda. Ameimar v'ravashi mashu yadayu. Ameimar and Ravashi rubbed their hands with this mixture. Marzutra lo mashi yadei. And Marzutra did not. Amri lei lo savar lamar lehad amar Rav Sheshat barda shari. They asked him, don't you hold like Rav Sheshat taught that barda is permissible to do on Shabbos. There's no problem. So Amalehu, he said to them, Rav Mordechai, Rav Mordechai said to them, don't bother him about it. Leave the rabbi alone. He's not using the barda to rub his hands and rub himself. It's not because it's Shabbos, but afilu bechol namilo. He doesn't use it on weekdays either. Namilo svirle. The savala ki haitana detanya, migare adam galdei tzua v'galdei makam al b'sarov v'shvid tzaro, v'im b'shvid yapot atzmo asu. He holds like this opinion that says, you're allowed to cleanse yourself if it bothers you, but you're not allowed to beautify yourself in ways that women beautify themselves. And this is ruled in halacha. Men are not allowed to shave their arms. Men are not allowed to shave their armpits. Men are not allowed to use cosmetics that are generally female uses of beautifying oneself. It even says that a man is not supposed to stand too long in front of the mirror. A woman is. She's supposed to take her time and make sure she looks nice. A man is supposed to look presentable. But when a man spends too much time in front of the mirror, then he's becoming like a woman. And it says you're not supposed to dress like a woman. And an application of this is even in things like shaving one's chest. So a guy once called me up, says he has to do an EKG. And in order, in ancient times, today they don't need this anymore. But up until a few years ago, when they did an EKG, they'd have to stick the monitors onto your chest with a sticky thing, and it doesn't stick if there's hair there. So what they do, take a razor, clean off his chest, and put the thing on. Are you allowed to do that? Yes, you're allowed to do that. If you're stuck at home and you have only one coat, your wife's pink parka, so that's permissible to use, because you're not wearing it as a woman's coat, you're wearing it because you're cold. So if you're cold and you need her pink parka to go out and take out the garbage, you can do that. That's okay. Okay, we're going to pick up here, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week.
This idea of